Justin Robert Young podcast is brought to you, as always, by patreon.com/JURY. Gentlemen, welcome to the Justin Robert Young Daily Podcast. We call it Jury Daily because it's shorter than saying Justin Robert Young. I hope everybody had a good weekend. I had a very good weekend. I had a very taxing weekend. People from all over the place, man. LA, Vegas, Texas, Sacramento. Everybody came on into town. We had a big old week of wrestling. Now, I don't know how many times that I have talked about Hood Slam on this particular program, but it is one of my favorite things to do in Oakland, California, nay the world. It is a professional, an independent professional wrestling outfit that I just feel blessed. I'm blessed to be around because it is so much different than what you would think when you say professional wrestling. And the oddest thing about it is that it it's one of those things that is like caught between the middle or caught in the middle of two very specific kinds of fandoms. And yet, unlike many things, it is not in the mushy middle to its detriment. It's in the mushy middle to its benefit. Now, let me try to lay this out here for you, because I know it might sound a little bit confusing. But wrestling fans, let me hip you to this if you're not aware. A fussy bunch. They are very, very, very fussy. They are very particular about what you what they like. Very particular about what they don't like. They are very judgmental. They are often very, very provincial about whether or not this thing is too much like this other thing, or you hate it because it's not like another thing. And so it tends to make pro wrestling, which is a specious business to be in, to be sure. In fact, one of my great wishes is to communicate with independent wrestling outfits all over the country and just get a sense of their books. Have them honestly and anonymously talk about how much money they either do or don't make. Just so we as a community could understand what I would hope, not hope, but I would, my thought that I don't think that independent wrestling as a whole makes money. Now, I guess you could probably say that about a lot of industries, entertainment industries, things are fairly boom and bust, and there's a high failure rate. But I think that professional wrestling is like, or indie wrestling rather, is, it might be something that just runs permanently at a deficit, even now when things are blowing up. Hood Slam, I'm pretty sure, makes money. But hardcore wrestling fans are like, oh, it's too silly. Doesn't look like the kind of wrestling that I like. And randos tend to think, oh, it's pro wrestling. I haven't watched that since I was a kid. There's other things I can be doing on a Friday night. And so you would think that that show would not be what it is, which, what it is packed to the goddamn gills and almost always sold out each and every week with crowds the likes of which you don't see at indie wrestling all that much. Not only do you not see that many people, you don't see that many, what do they call them? Guys, I'm trying to think about, what do you, like 52% of the population? Women. That's it. Women. You don't see a lot of women at indie wrestling events. You see a lot of women at Hood Slam. This is remarkable. So it was great to have a few awesome people in town. My 1-900 Wrestling co-host, Willie Dills, was in town. We got to hang out and see the show. He really, really liked it. Our friends Katie and James came down from or came up from L.A. It was an absolute blast. Next night, we do the New Japan Pro Wrestling G1 special in the Cow Palace, which the nerdy elements of this are something that is probably best reserved for the wrestling podcast. So if you want more, then please go ahead and get the 1-900 Wrestling Show. We have a diary episode, an audio diary episode about both these shows going up today. But suffice to say, it was an amazing clash of cultures and fantastic show. I loved it. I thought it was great. But there was a thing that happened in both shows, actually. It kind of remind you about kind of the preciousness of, I'm going to put this in the context of pro wrestling, but I really think that this is about a lot of different kinds of pursuits and arts. Because no matter what you do in life, IMO, you are constantly putting yourself into a lane. Some lanes are broader than others. You got a lot in common with a lot of people. When somebody looks at you, they see themselves in your reflection, and that means something, right? It's everybody who works in an office, right? Some people don't work in offices. Maybe some people work night shifts. They work in factories. They work in retail. They work in entertainment. Like, no matter what, you're always going to be defining yourself with every step you take. If that makes sense. Now, folks who decide to do professional wrestling is odd. I mean, it's a weird situation. A lot of folks, specifically on the indie circuit, it's not like they're making enough money on that. They got to work somewhere else. Flexible jobs that have weekends off, usually. But furthermore, you are risking a lot for a little. And I think this would probably factor into, you know, athletics. I mean, I'm sure, you know, hell, it was only really a fairly recent thing over the last, like, 30 years that even professional athletes didn't have jobs over the summer. And I would suspect that anybody who's making, I mean, literal, by the literal definition, anybody who's making money doing pro wrestling is professional, right? They just might not be making your whole rent professional. But there were two performers that got injured at the shows we were at over the weekend. One was a homegrown talent out here in Hood Slam who has done some amazing things. And really, she had to miss not only a huge show the night after, but also a tour to Japan. That's Shotzi Blackheart. She fucked up her ankle or her knee. I can't remember. But then the scary one was at the New Japan show, Hiromu Takahashi. I'm not pretending like everybody knows who the fuck Hiromu Takahashi is, but if you're interested to know the level of physicality that this man operates at, then go ahead and Google Hiromu Takahashi. But that man broke his neck in the Cow Palace. He finished the match. Wound up going to the hospital. The last word from his employer, New Japan Pro Wrestling, was that he is awake and he is able to sit up and talk. Now, while we are all thankful that he has that, it's certainly a far cry from being able to do the kinds of stuff that he normally does. That is a guy who chased his dream, and as we speak right now, is stuck on the other side of the planet. Hopefully, you know, hopefully he's somebody who's going to be able to walk again, but you never know. Neck injuries are tricky. And even if he is able to walk again, will he ever be able to perform at the level that he is and was used to? You know, I don't want to make this any kind of treacly, like, follow your dreams sort of ending, but it's always fascinating and interesting to look at the trials that we go through, be it in life, in business, in art, whatever you want to do. And I've always kind of defined internally that in reality, when we get out of our own heads, impressive feats, the things that we are going to remember, that you're defined by, the things that you want to build a legacy on, are impressive for a reason. And in my opinion, the reason is because every step that you walk, you can metaphorically see the strewn carcasses of those that tried to do this and failed right here. And this is not to say that they did anything wrong. It's just sometimes it happens. So when you have a situation like that, you just got to say, well, fuck. If you're going to keep walking, you got to know on some level it is in tribute to the person that stopped doing it before. And it doesn't have to be as dramatic as a broken neck across the world. I think, hell, it's anything. Pick anything hard. Think about everybody who quit. In fact, if you're in the middle of something right now, literally think about everybody who is going to do a thing that you're doing right now, be it a project, personal, whatever, raising a family. Look at how many people fucking stop doing it. I feel good about yourself. There's a little Monday thought for you. Let's go ahead and get into your emails. You can always send me an email, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. I was going to have another story in here, by the way. We'll do it tomorrow. Vlad sent us a sent us a thing. Send us a story about somebody getting somebody getting ejected from a theater for jacking off. Pretty funny. All right, here we go. We got a lot of emails. I forgot that I already made a doc for this. RJ writes, about a year ago, one of my friends died suddenly from a massive heart attack at the age of 28. We'll call him Robert. We all gather under a tent. The wreath is placed on the casket, and the minister gives his final readings. He then asks his immediate family to come take a flower, if they so please. His mother was the first to come forth, and what happened still haunts me to this day. The funeral people had one of those ugly green carpet-looking materials on the ground under the tent. As Robert's mom stepped forward, she takes a flower, and her foot slips. It happened so fast that my brain didn't register what happened at first. I just blinked, heard a sharp gasp from the crowd straight out of an action movie, and there I saw her. She literally stepped through the ugly carpet and into the hole and fell waist deep in her son's grave! Three people help her back to her feet. And I learned something about Robert and his mom. apparently, she is where he got his dark sense of humor. Because she looks around, sees how distraught everybody else was, and yells as loud as possible, "Well, Robert was always pulling my leg." Epic save from the grieving mom. Jesus. That might be the most impressive joke I have ever heard in my entire life. Because there are degrees of difficulty to comedy, but I don't know if there is a higher degree of difficulty than grieving mother burying her son. Oh, Jesus. Gray writes, this wondrous America Day, which so happened to land on a Wednesday, was the best thing that could have happened, as my corporate overlord saw this glorious capitalist society granted its employees Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday off. So I stand firm that all future July 4th should be on Wednesdays. Yeah, right. Everick writes, I'm down with your proposal to move the 4th as long as it's moved forward, meaning that it might conflict with Canada Day. As an American who until recently lived in Canada, I love double dipping on both Independence Days and Thanksgivings, maximizing my opportunities to get drunk in a way that supposedly honors a historical event. Good for you, you say, but who cares? I don't observe Canada Day. Well, why not? Americans literally made up Cinco de Mayo and rewrote Mexican history just so they could celebrate Mexican Independence Day by getting smashed on cheap tequila and eating weird-ass hard-shell tacos. My proposed deal, we move July 4th forward, but also take off July 1st to drink disgustingly watery Caesars and eat poutine. So he's saying that if we're going to make fake holidays, we need a fake Canada holiday. I'm down with that, too. We should do it during hockey season, though, right? I feel like that's the way. Roe writes, first time, long time, I was having this debate with my friends, and I would love to have the jury listenership answer this. Is it racist to post on your dating profile, if you're white, that you only date white people? I think it is, but my girlfriend says no. And he also notes that he's not white. So this is an interesting question, and I would like for anybody to go ahead and write in justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Now, mind you where this is coming from. Roe is having this conversation with his girlfriend. Oh, no, with his friends. Sorry, not his girlfriend. Oh, no, he says his girlfriend says no. All right, so he's having this debate. His girlfriend says no. Now, Your Honor, let me speak for the defense here. There's a lot of people that have a lot of very specific tastes. You know, as somebody once told me, there is an ass for every seat in this world. And if that is the case, then some people are very specific about where they would like to sit. Redheads, blondes, brunettes, guys in shape, bigger guys, gender. A lot of specifics. So, and at the risk of getting, you know, why don't we have a white appreciation month, a white history month? Is it homophobic to state that you only date straight people? I mean, that's something that's hard built into the app. Is it homophobic to not also download Grindr if you're looking for company as a straight man? You are only saying that this is who you would prefer to be finding right now. It also brings up some interesting ideas when it comes to what these dating apps are. Is this dating app a market for which you are walking by and you are saying, oh, a little bit of this, a little bit of this? Or is it a statement of purpose for which you are saying, here is who I am and what I believe? and I lay it to the fates to match me with my soulmate. I don't know. I'm so glad that I didn't have to do this. Very, very exciting to me. All right. We're a little bit long, so we're gonna wrap it up here. Thank you guys so much for listening. Again, patreon.com/JURY is where you can support the show. You can email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Justin R. Young. Join the conversation at diamondclub.reddit.com. That about wraps it up. I will see you guys later!
On the day that we met on the internet, I asked her for a photograph. She sent it over to me, said, I know it's ugly. And I said, girl, ugly ain't the half. Look at you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.